Hierdie inset word aan jou gebring met die komplimente van Radio Kaapse Kansel 729 AM. Besoek ons gerus by www.capepulpit.co.za.
Baie welkom by die program Krag van die Bybel, Krag van die Woord van God. Dit is heerlik om net weer saam met julle te kuier en te luister eers na die Bible Project se potgooi wat nou gaan oor generosity, vrygewigheid. Vandag se episode se titel is God as the Generous Host. Ons luister eers na hulle want dit is vir ons so belangrik om op verskillende maniere saam te praat, saam te dink, saam te mediteer rondom die woord van die Here. Om die krag van die woord te ervaar in ons lewe, in alle omstandighede. In moeilike en maklike, in goeie en slegte tye in ons lewe, om werklik die te leer om te verstaan en te groei in die luister na die woord. Abo, bied hierdie program aan. Jy kan na Marieke toe gaan direct as jy in berading opleiding belangstel. 084-501-1102. Of jy kan as jy berading nodig het direct na Kaapse Kansel toe inbel. Enige dag in die week. 021-180-5744. En ons wil graag begin om beter te verstaan dat hoe lees ons die woord van die Here. Jy het nie 'n teologiese onderrig en grade nodig nie. Maar jy kan gehelp geword deur mense wat wel die oorspronklike tale verstaan en die woord ken. Maar dit is daar vir ons ook om werklik wanneer ons lees en wanneer ons dit oordink die getuienis van die Gees in ons te ervaar. En soos wat ons dan stoei om dit te verstaan en dit toe te pas in ons lewe, nie sommer net vinnig nie, maar dit kom deur inspanning. En hierdie gedeelte ook vandag gaan ons later kyk in Matteus hoofstuk 13, juist hoekom Jesus dan gelykenisse gebruik. Maar kom ons nou eers gaan luister na hierdie episode van God se volheid wat hy vrygewig deel met ons. Bible Project Tim en John praat juist dan daaroor hoe die Bybel begin met 'n beeld van God as hierdie verstommende vrygewige gasheer vir die mensdom op sy aarde. 'n Beeld wat deur die hele skepingsverhaal in Genesis vir ons geskep word en dat ons verstaan dit is wie God is. Maar dan kom die mense in Genesis 3 natuurlik en bederf die hele partytjie om in Eden te bly in vreugde saam met God deur leens te glo. En daardie leens is dat God eintlik suinig is en dat hy terughoudend is. Dat hy dit net vir homself wil hê. Die teenoorgestelde as wat die woord vir ons van die begin af wil vertel. So in hierdie episode begin Tim en John dan by die begin in die Bybel om te vertel hoe God in alles wat hy doen ook deur die Bybel vrygewig is en genadig is en hoe dat mense reageer met agterdog, gierigheid, jaloesie, moord en soveel verskillende sondige reaksies. Daarom is dit om te lees en werklik te hoor wat 'n gawe is van die Gees. Is so belangrik vir ons. Moet nie maar net lees, bedink dit en vra die Here om dit vir jou oop te maak. Kom ons luister nou eers na Tim en John, Bible Projects, waar hulle oor hierdie wonderlike onderwerp gesels, Generosity. Bly ingeskakel.
Hey everybody, this is Tim at The Bible Project, and you're listening to The Bible Project Podcast. Last week, John and I started a new conversation about the theme of generosity in the storyline of the Bible. This is connected to a new video that we're making at The Bible Project. In the last episode, we explored some of Jesus' most famous teachings about freedom from anxiety and learning about the generosity and abundance that God has in store for his people. Jesus walked around with this deep conviction that despite all of the pain and suffering that he saw going on in the world, despite all the pain and suffering that he himself experienced, he still believed that Yahweh, the God of Israel, the creator of heaven and earth, is an extremely generous host who has given an overabundance of resources and opportunities to all of us. Jesus was able to manage that tension and think it through because you can see in his teachings, his heart and his mind were soaked in the Hebrew scriptures and specifically the portrait of the generous God in Genesis chapters 1 and 2. So that's what we're going to look at today. We're going to explore the creation story in Genesis 1 and how it portrays God as an extremely generous host who's packing creation full of abundance and opportunity. We're also going to look at the story of Adam and Eve, how they forfeit and take advantage of God's generosity. And then we're going to go into the next story, outside of Eden. We're going to explore the story of Cain and Abel. One way to think about it is a story about one person who gets angry about God's seeming generosity to another. How do you respond when you feel like God's being more generous to somebody else, but not to you? And that raises an even more fascinating question that keeps getting focused on throughout the storyline of the Bible, the concept of God choosing a whole line of people and being extremely generous to them, the family of Abraham. John and I explore the topic of election and why it is that God seems to be generous to some more than he is to others, or maybe we're just thinking about this all upside down. We're going to explore these questions and more today on the podcast. So thanks for joining us, and here we go. So we're talking about the theme of generosity in the storyline of the Bible.
You twitched a little when you said theme. You're still not there. You're still not at theme.
I might convince myself by the time we're done with this conversation.
Great.
Yeah. We're talking about generosity in the storyline of the Bible.
Yeah.
We're going to make a video. We've been pondering, along with Jesus and the poets of the Psalms, the portrait of God as a generous host in Genesis 1. This image of God throwing this amazing party.
Yeah. You show up into existence at an amazing party.
Yeah, you wake up.
You wake up in an amazing
party. Not just you go to someone's house.
Yeah.
You wake up.
But let's say you did go to someone's house
for
an amazing party.
Yeah.
And everything's hosted. It's amazing. Everything's a gift.
Yeah.
You're not going to worry. You're going to have a good time.
Yes. Yeah, sure.
Right?
Yeah.
You're not sitting there like, how do I make sure I get enough drinks? And
yeah, that's right.
Where's my little corner of this party?
I better grab three from the tray when the person walks by.
Wait, that person's using the hot tub? Like, I thought, darn it.
there's five more over there.
Yeah,
that's good. You're not worrying.
That's Jesus just saying, like...
That's Jesus in Luke 12.
Like, if you really believe this God's a host of an amazing event, you're just going to enjoy the event.
Mm-hmm.
Which then also feels careless
when
it comes to suffering. But that's what we're going to talk about, is why is there suffering an amazing event?
That's right. Surely Jesus obviously isn't a stranger to suffering and death.
Yeah.
Look at what happened to him. And of course, he grew up in a beautiful land of abundance, northern Israel, Palestine, but that was full of impoverished Jews because of the Roman occupation.
Yeah.
So how can he foster this worldview in that kind of setting? Well, the story on which Jesus was raised offers a powerful explanation for why there's such poverty in a world of abundance.
It's like you showed up to a party and all of a sudden you notice people acting like they're not at a party. They're just doing all these weird things that you shouldn't do at a party. Like they're like forming these factions and they're like, they're making sure certain people don't have access to certain things.
They like take the hors d'oeuvre trays.
Yeah, they're like, this is ours now.
Out of, and then they begin to stack them in this, in like this, the den.
Yeah. And they only give certain people access to the
den.
Yeah,
then they block off the den from the rest of the people and they form a little group.
Yeah. And everyone's like, what is happening? And where's the host? Like, someone needs to take care of this.
Totally.
We need him to act.
Yeah.
And like, come back and make sure this party goes right.
Okay, good. Ooh, let's make this a meta story. So that...
The banquet.
The banquet is Genesis 1. And then you start seeing people steal hors d'oeuvre trays and smuggle them into the den.
Yeah.
And then they form a little pack. And then you start to ask yourself, like, what? Why are they acting that way?
Yeah.
What's underneath that? What's the psychology?
Yeah. They should just be enjoying themselves with everyone else.
So foolish. Why are they being so short-sighted, such a limited perspective? What would motivate people to act that way? And Genesis chapter 3 offers us a portrait of why humans would do something like that.
Yeah.
And it actually begins a portrait that's going to be filled out in the storyline of the Bible of why humans would steal the hors d'oeuvre. That's so good. I like it, John.
Yeah.
That's helpful.
Totally. I'm taking this chocolate fountain for myself.
That's with the strawberries.
Where's the strawberries? They're all mine.
This is ridiculous. What a ridiculous thing to think about. Yeah. Okay. So Genesis 3 opens telling us that there is a snake there that's one of the creatures of the field that the Lord God had made. That's the wording. Mm-hmm. But it's more shrewd.
Yeah.
It's a little sharper than the rest.
Mm. He shows up at the party. He's like, you know what?
Yeah.
I think there's something more here we can do.
Well, remember, this isn't an inherently negative word, this word shrewd. It gets translated as crafty in all English, modern English translations.
It sounds negative.
But this word appears only elsewhere in the book of Proverbs, where it's a neutral or positive trait.
Mm. Okay.
It's somebody who sizes up all the options and possibilities of a situation and can come up with really creative, clever solutions.
Yeah. In Strengths Finders, that's called strategic.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly. The snake was more strategic. And so he sees all of this abundance and something happens in him that we're not told.
Yeah.
It's not actually developed until later in the biblical story that you find out why this creature did what it did.
Yeah, this backstory of this creature.
Yeah. You have to wait, till Genesis 11 and then really Isaiah 13 and Ezekiel and Book of Daniel.
And we'll make a video about
it. We'll make a video about that. But all that happens and he approaches the woman and says, the first thing he tries to undermine is the trust that the host is generous.
Hmm.
Indeed, did God really say that you can't eat from any of these trees? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, he didn't say that.
It's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
But, and the woman corrects him. No, no, it's the opposite. We can eat from any. But just now the sentence, now the option is out, is possibilities out there.
Yeah, now you're thinking it.
Now you're thinking it.
Yeah.
Don't think of pink elephants.
Yeah, now you're thinking about it.
Yeah. What? No, that's not what God said. Right?
It's the power of...
That's true, though.
Suggestion.
That's right. Yeah. Even if it seems absurd or impossible... It becomes somewhat more possible once you say it out loud.
Once you say it out loud, once you plant the idea.
Yeah. Did God say you can't eat any of the food at the party? No. He said that we could. Oh, yeah. Actually, but there's that one thing that we are not supposed to eat from the tree that's in the middle of the garden. And it's just here, it just assumes that you've internalized what knowing good and evil means and what it would mean to take that for yourself. Mm. Notice what she says, but God said about that tree, you shall not eat from it or touch it, which God never said the touch thing, or you will surely die. The serpent said to the woman, no, once again, oh, no. That hors d'oeuvre plate is fine for you to eat. Go right ahead. It's a different tactic now. First, it was just that power of suggestion.
Yeah.
Now it's an alternative story.
Yeah.
Yeah. God told you, you're going to kill yourselves. You're going to die if you cease to know and discern good and evil on your own wisdom. Actually, that's not the case. Actually, the opposite's the case. Here's what God knows but isn't telling you, that when you eat from that, your eyes will be opened and you'll be like Elohim. Mm-hmm. you'll be like the divine in the capacity to know And not just know. To know good and evil means then to define it, to make decisions about it. I mean, we're only five verses in, and it's the full deception package is right there.
Yeah. You called the tree of the knowledge of good and evil like an hors d'oeuvre plate.
I did.
Where this story starts to feel weird or absurd is like having an hors d'oeuvre plate in the center of the banquet table. Mm-hmm. And then saying, guys, just stay away from that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there's something so central to this urge to take control ourselves. It is central. It's like always there, right in the
center. That's a good point. I pondered two times in Genesis 1 through 3, its position in the middle.
In the middle of the garden.
The garden.
It's always bummed me out.
It's highlighted. Perhaps one way to think about that is it's describing the ever-present possibility of me to abuse my existence and the abundance or opportunity that I have.
Yeah.
It's ever present. In other words, some people would say it's in the middle and they would blame God for that. Why did he put it right there? You know, have you heard that line before?
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why didn't put he put it, in a corner?
I think I've heard you make that joke.
Lock
before.
It up.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. The point is, but that's not true to human experience.
It's always present.
It's always a possibility for me to ruin. Oh, gosh, I think this all the time. Either my kids will do this, you know, we'll be having a great moment at dinner, and then, like, one of my sons will just, like, August did this the other night. He was eating rice, and we are in this great conversation, and then he just ejected it all out of his mouth.
Yeah.
Just spewed rice all over the table for no good reason.
Yeah.
He just wanted to know what would happen.
See what would happen.
And it did on my face, and it's like, then all this great conversation got, and it was over. We're just one small choice away from ruining the party.
Party foul.
Yeah, it's always present. It's in the middle. John, thank you.
Yeah, right?
For some reason, that's locking in for me in a way I haven't quite thought about it before.
Yeah, it's in the middle. I've thought about it in terms of that you can't get from one side of the garden to the other without walking by it.
Yes.
And another way you could think about it is like no matter where you're looking in the garden, like it's in your field of view.
Yeah.
It's like it's ever looming.
Correct. Yes. Yes.
Reality.
Yeah. That's right. And so remember, actually, I want to do in our Genesis 1 and 2 series, I want to do a whole video about the tree.
Yeah.
Because sacred trees representing either the gift of life from the gods or sacred resources from the gods. This is a motif in ancient Near Eastern art and literature.
Yeah.
The tree of life. There's Egyptian trees of life and Babylonian. You can go find drawings of them. Google them and you'll find them. They're cool looking. So, yeah, I think a biblical author is taking this motif and transforming it because knowing good and evil is also going to be the gift that the Torah presents to Israel. What are they going to do with this gift of knowing good and evil that God's given them through the Torah? Are they going to follow it? Are they going to abuse it? The gift of wisdom. In the book of Proverbs, the wisdom is a tree of life. It's from Proverbs
chapter 3. The Torah is a tree of life.
The Torah is a tree of life. That's right. Yeah, that's how the book of Proverbs frames it. Yes, my Torah is a tree of life, the father says in the speeches in Proverbs 1 through 9. And so the tree
and the Torah. And not following the Torah would then be the tree of knowledge of good and evil.
It would be taking the tree and reducing it to my own wisdom.
Yeah.
And the same in Proverbs, it's rejecting the wisdom of your elders is the equivalent to taking from the tree and defining good and evil by your own wisdom. Mm. And that's an ever-present possibility in every moment of my existence is to ruin everything by a horrible choice. One horrible choice. I think about that all the time.
You know what? Yeah, I think about that too. I remember years ago I was talking with our colleague Ken. And he asked me this question. He said, he's got the funniest questions sometimes. He said, how many choices do you think you're away from completely screwing up your life? And it turned into like this thought experiment game. Sure, and we're like, okay, how many?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about it. And I'm like, is it four or five? Is it? And then once we kind of worked through it, we're like, we are one or two decisions away from completely screwing up our life.
Yeah, ruining everything irreversibly. Wow. It's terrifying.
It's terrifying.
It's a tree in the middle of the garden.
It's a tree
right
in the middle of the garden.
Yeah, it is.
It's just right there, it's ready to destroy you.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, remember, our meta story is there's a group of people at the party.
Yeah.
They're locked up in the... Are we doing the den or the pool room?
The pool room. I like the pool room.
Okay, let's go pool room. All right. They've stolen half the hors d'oeuvre plates.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, why are they doing that?
Yeah.
Well, somehow... And let's say you can interview one.
Yeah.
And they'll be honest.
Yeah.
And they'll say, well... We began to become aware, like...
This party will end one day.
This party will end. And there may actually not be enough for everybody.
Yeah.
And we think it would be good for us to hoard up hors d'oeuvre plates. That seems wise in our eyes.
Yeah.
And so, sorry for you guys out there, but we got to think about, you know?
Right.
Our group.
You guys will figure it out,
You'll figure it out. There's enough out there still for you, but we're going to seal off ourselves. Wow, that's a very different mentality than when we all first showed up here.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's such an interesting parable.
Yeah, it is.
You could have a conversation with that person, and they could really convince you in a logical way.
Correct.
Of like, you know,
yes.
Like, I'm sorry this is hard for you.
Yeah.
But this is the right thing for us
to
be doing.
That's what I've got to do. I've got to look out for my group.
It's the good and right thing.
Correct.
And you can kind of go like, I guess I can see how you got there.
That's right.
It sucks for me, though.
Yeah. Genesis 3:6. When the woman saw that the tree was good for eating.
It's good.
Perfectly good Makes tree. Sense. It was a beautiful to the eyes. It's nice. And that the tree was desirable. This is key. It's the word chamad in Hebrew. That's the verb. Or nechmad is the actual word, but then it's from the root chamad. It's the word to covet.
Mm.
One of the Ten Commandments, mm-hmm. do not covet. It's this word, desire.
Mm.
Desire. So the tree was covetable.
So do not covet could also be do not desire?
Correct. Which doesn't sound right in English.
Yeah.
The idea, covet is actually a good English word there because it's about illegitimate, a desire for a thing that is not rightly mine
mm-hmm.
or that ought not to be mine.
Mm.
So this tree is desirable
mm.
for making me wise.
Yeah.
So she took coveting, desiring, and taking is the fundamental act here. And then she ate, and then she gave. She's giving. Oh, how generous. No.
Yeah.
After the desiring and taking,
mm.
even giving is now tainted.
It's now been,
with her and he ate. It's just six verses that we've looked at of Genesis, but it's, study and what people do with abundance. The problem of abundance for selfish humans. It's good.
Well, in a world of abundance, in the nature of this reality, there is also the ever-present potential.
Mm-hmm.
To grew it up or to turn it inwards.
Yeah. Or something potentially that can look more noble.
And it can look noble. And it will look noble.
To look out for
me. That's the thing.
To look out for me and
mine.
Is
the problem
of
twisting abundance into selfishness
mm-hmm.
looks noble.
Yes. Within a universe where there's not enough, if my perspective on the universe is there's not enough.
Yes. Then it makes perfect sense.
It makes perfect sense.
It's very noble.
Yes.
You're taking care of of the people you love.
Yeah.
And that problem is represented in the image of a beautiful fruit tree in the center of the garden. And God said, it's going to look good, but trust me.
It will kill you.
That's the one that'll destroy the party.
Yes. It is interesting. Yeah, I'm interested in this limited perspective. Again, back to where we began this. Jesus begins this teaching that ends with him saying, therefore, sell your stuff and give it away.
Yeah.
Because it's going to corrupt your perspective. Because the more stuff you have, the more you're going to be thinking about how there's not enough. It's like it'll foster the opposite mindset.
Mm.
But the abundance creation mindset of the biblical story will free you to enjoy the party. That's interesting. It's two approaches to seeing the world. And in one, it so clearly seems absurd that you would hoard things or store up things for you and your group in a way that deprives others. That doesn't make any sense in
Genesis 1 mindset. Wouldn't it be interesting to show up at that party and it's well into the party. It's like, and things have been pretty established of like all this weird stuff happening. People in the pool room, people in the den. Like there's...
Oh, got it. There's groups holding up in different rooms.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
People are just kind of, they're not acting like it's a party anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you show up and you know know it's a party.
Yeah.
And you know that there is enough.
Yes. Yeah.
And that would be such a weird to then go into the pool room and interact with those people.
Yeah. You're trying to convince them.
And you're trying to convince them, well, there is enough.
Yeah.
And then for you to then go, you just know like the host is going to bring more.
Yeah.
And it's going to continue.
Right.
And even all of this chaos that we're creating, he's going to come and like solve that too.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, it's weird. You're going to be like, I want to try to figure out how to enjoy the party, but also like help you try to figure out how to enjoy the party.
Totally. Yeah.
Let's get this started again.
Yeah, that's right. You know, what's funny. We've already said this, but it's more clear to me in this moment that when you read those teachings of Jesus where he says, look at the ravens and look at the lilies, and many, I have found, myself included, many people, at least in our cultural setting, we read that and it's hard for us. We're like, that sounds hippie.
Yeah, sounds hippie.
Or irresponsible. Mm-hmm. But what's actually happening is just this clash of worldviews where the reason it bothers me is because I don't actually hold that view of the world. Yeah. So just a quick, we've talked through the flow of Genesis 3 through 11 multiple times, but just think through it real quickly with me in light of this abundance, generosity versus scarcity and taking mindset. Mm-hmm. Genesis 4, Cain's jealousy and anger compels him to take the life of his brother. Mm. So instead of focusing on his ability to give life by being a farmer of the ground, he's angry.
Well, can we stop here on that? Because this bugs me about the story of Cain and Abel. God is more generous to Abel than he is to Cain.
Just looks with favor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what does that mean?
Yeah.
I got to imagine that means, okay, maybe I'm reading too much into this, but you give an offering to God's in the sense of all this is yours. Mm-hmm. Here's a symbol of that. Mm-hmm. But you're doing it because you want another good harvest. You want abundance.
Yeah. Or you're saying thank you.
And you're saying thank you.
Or you're saying thank you for the harvest that we just had.
Oh, all they're doing is saying thank you, maybe. Mm-hmm. But the expectation is favor.
Well, I think it's a reciprocal kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yahweh sends rain, you know, gives me abundant crops. And so I take these symbolic tokens of my crop and I say, thank you so much.
You think these were thank offerings that Cain and Abel were doing?
Cain's offering, he's a worker of the ground.
Yeah. Well, they both offer a portion of their...
Correct. That's right.
Harvest.
That's right. What he's offering is a grain offering, which in Leviticus is solely a thank you offering.
Oh, is that significant?
It didn't atone, cover for sins. It wasn't a form of petition. It was thank you.
Should I be thinking about that when I'm reading the story?
Oh, I think so. I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Totally. So that
Cain saying thank you.
And that's Abel. No, that's Cain's story. He's saying thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And Abel has the...
Mm-hmm. He brings, from the firstborn of his flock.
Yeah. And that's a sin offering. Yeah.
The Passover sacrifice is a firstborn.
Yeah.
The Passover meal is a firstborn of the flock. Yes. And again, this is Genesis 4. All of the language here is crafted with an eye towards the depictions of sacrifice later on. However, I don't think the story is trying to tell us that one sacrifice is better than another. Both are legitimate forms of sacrifice.
And I've heard you say that, and so I grant that.
Yeah.
But God shows favor towards one and not the other.
Correct.
So what does that mean other than he is being more generous to one than the other?
Yeah. My current way of understanding it, but I have learned that these things develop and change the more you ponder, is that it's an intentionally ambiguous gap in the narrative.
The favor.
Because it's going to be developed throughout all the generations. Why Abraham, but not his brothers, his other two brothers? Mm-hmm. Why did God choose him to be the vehicle of blessing? Why Isaac, but not Ishmael? Mm. And then certainly, why Jacob, whose name means deceiver? Yeah. And so it's the mystery. Genesis, is developing this portrait of the mystery.
Of why God chose
one
specific
God
lineage.
Chose one family out of all the families.
Mm, that's what this favor is
through whom
about.
To work. And it's the mystery of election. Yeah, the whole theme of election in Paul's writing
is all about this.
And it's a very old mystery.
Yeah.
And the fact that God chooses one doesn't mean that there isn't more blessing for others.
Yeah. Well, so in the way I've been taught election growing up in the faith was it does mean that.
Ah, I see.
But that is interesting when you connect it to this story of God choosing one person over another as a vehicle.
Yeah, for blessing for all the others.
For all the others.
That's the logic of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Especially Abraham. It's especially dense in the Abraham.
But whenever election. I was taught and read election kind of stuff in the New Testament,
I see.
Ripped out of that context.
I see.
And it's really just more about why do some people get to, get to go to the party and others don't.
That's right. Well, once you take election out of its biblical context and you put it into a, some people go to the good place after they die, some people go to the bad place, who gets to go? The ones that, that are pre-written in the script.
Yeah.
But that's a different story than the biblical story.
All right.
That's certainly not what Paul has in mind. In Ephesians 1, he has in mind this story.
Yeah, that's interesting.
About the family of Abraham selected out from all the nations to bring blessing to the others.
So, okay. So, back to Cain and Abel.
I'm so sorry, Cain and Abel. Yes.
You're great. I did that, and that was wonderful. That was helpful for me. But to get back on track.
Yeah, that's right.
The favor...
Yeah.
Isn't I'm not supposed to be thinking like, oh, God's hooking up one and not the other. He's being more generous to one than the other. I mean, there is a sense.
Oh, there is a favor.
There is a favor.
Yep. But it doesn't mean that it's at the complete expense of the other person.
Yeah. Well, Cain experienced it that way.
He sure feels that way.
Yeah.
But is that a necessary response? Or is that just a limited perspective, selfish response? Very similar. Again, remember Genesis 4 and 3 are mirror stories of each other.
Right.
So God's, everything's fine. And then all of a sudden, the possibility is introduced of, oh, but perhaps God's holding out on me. So in Genesis 3,
so
it's
Abel gets this thing.
Abel gets this
thing. What's God holding out on me?
Yeah. Is there, so yeah. Does that mean I don't get? Well, what is it that I don't get?
Yeah.
The favor? Well, what does that mean for the future? Does that mean, in the same way that the snake says, did God say, don't eat from any tree? No, he didn't.
It's a limited perspective.
Limited perspective.
Do I trust that God is good?
Mm-hmm.
And even though my brother's experiencing something I don't get to experience, do I still trust
that
in the end...
There are also good things for me,
there's
too.
There's good things for me, too.
Yeah.
What about when Paul says, though, Abel I love, Cain I hated?
Esau.
Oh, that was Esau.
Jacob and Esau. Actually, Jacob and Esau becomes, through design patterns, a really deep exploration of the Cain and Abel story of the two brothers.
See how I got them mixed up in my head?
Yeah, exactly. They're so mapped onto each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. However, it's also clear that when Paul's quoting there, he's quoting from Malachi, which is refracting back onto the Genesis story through the lens of the whole history of Israel. Because in Malachi, Jacob and Esau are tribal names of the whole tribes.
Oh, okay.
So, dude, Cain and Abel, through Jacob and Esau, become, all developed through design patterns, the stories Israel versus the Edomites through the story. And when Paul or Malachi looks back on the Cain and Abel story, they do so through the lens of the whole story of Edom and Israel, Jacob and Esau, Cain and Abel. And as if it's one thing, because it is. In the final frame of the Hebrew Bible. And the loving and the hating, I think presently, at least as far as I understand that, it's a hyperbolic contrast. Just like...
Because that language makes it difficult for me to go...
Actually, here, where Malachi is getting the Jacob I love but Esau I hated, is Malachi, dude, the Hebrew Bible's so awesome and complex. It's actually using... the language of how Jacob treated his two rival wives, the older and the younger. He loved the younger, but Leah, the older, was hated. That's a line in the Jacob story.
Oh.
He loved Rachel, but Leah was the hated one. Which doesn't mean he disliked her. It's a way, I think it's a...
Doesn't mean there was like all this animosity between them.
Yeah, I think it's a Semitic turn of phrase. At least I think.
It's another way to say he showed favor on one and not the other.
Yeah, it's a way. That's right.
So could you, in that Hebraic turn of phrase, say that Cain was hated and Abel was loved in this story?
I think so. I think so.
But not in the modern English way that we talk about hate.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. At least I think that's the case. I could be wrong about that. I need to think about it more.
Interesting.
Either way, Cain feels like he's being hated on in our English sense of the word.
Yeah.
He clearly feels that way.
Totally. And, he's downcast.
Mm-hmm, that's right. Maybe to use our party parable, it would be that the host comes out and brings a special hors d'oeuvre plate for the birthday boy. And then everybody else is like, what's the deal? Like, why did they get that special plate? Yeah, I know. I've got all these other plates here that are available to me too, but they got that one. Am I going to get that one? What if I don't?
Yeah, does that is mean it ever going to be my birthday?
Does that mean the host doesn't like me? Why doesn't he like me? I'm angry. I don't know. Something like that.
Yeah. Well, you imagine the party has gone, it's gotten so bad that the host is like, okay, what am I going to do here? Okay, here's what I'm going to do.
Oh, sure.
I'm just going to find someone here at the party.
Yeah, that's right.
To like
help convince them of the true, like, the real view of
remind
things.
Them of this is a party.
Yeah.
Get them living in the right way.
Well, sure. Yeah, sure.
And then,
so I'm going to hook one of these people up.
Yeah. I'm going to give them more attention.
That's right.
I'm going to bring them into my living room. We're going to chat about it. I'm going to tell them, like, this is the way of a real party.
Totally.
And I need you guys to get on board with me, mm-hmm. and then we're going to go. And then everyone else is looking around like, why are they getting all this favoritism?
Yeah, why do they get to go into the special room?
Why do they get, why are they hanging out in the fireplace with the host?
Yeah, I want that.
Yeah.
Why didn't he choose me?
Yeah, now I'm angry because they got favor.
Yeah. Yeah, now.
That's the Cain.
That's the Cain story.
Of like, God spending some extra time with that guy.
Yeah.
That means he doesn't like me.
He must not like me.
But his whole scheme is trying to get the whole party started for everyone again.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
And the host would be like, whoa.
Hold on.
There's like, there's something animating that.
Yeah, yeah. That's
within you.
Yeah.
That's a brute problem.
Totally. And the host is thinking, no, I'm working out a plan to restore the order and shalom to the party for everybody. Just wait a minute. You know?
Yeah.
And then the guy's like, no.
No, I'm taking this in my own hands.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm gonna.
Yeah. And then he kills the favored, the one brought into the room.
And which is not going to go well for the party.
Makes the party even worse.
Now you got a murder scene.
Totally. Okay, so God says to that guy, the murderer, man, you got to get out of here. You leave the party.
Hmm.
And so he leaves the building. He goes east and builds a city. Builds his own house with his own counterparty.
Yeah. I'm going to take my toys and
Except
my own party.
Things don't go well there because Lamech shows up to his party and just starts murdering people.
Yeah.
And then...
It's like, I know how you like to throw a party, Cain.
Yeah, totally.
That's really
ramping
up.
And then generations keep going by, and then those descendants, it all leads up to the building of the great anti-Eden party, which is the city of Babylon. And once again, God said, be fruitful and multiply, fill the land. And what they say is, no, 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 there's not enough. We got to all get in one place.
There's a fine line between a party and a mob.
Yeah, totally. Now, let's think this through with the Babylon story. So they say, let's all get together as one so that we're not scattered out there in the land.
Yeah.
And then let's build our own city and tower that ascends up to the realm of the gods.
Yeah.
The realm of God. And let's make a name for ourselves.
Yeah.
Let's provide for ourselves. And of course, God knows that that's going to go horribly. And so he scatters them. But once again, it's humans now providing for themselves. We'll make our own city. Don't want God to provide us with the party. We're going to make our own party, and it will have our name on the front door.
Yeah.
It's our city, and it's our party. And so the counter...
If you can't join them, beat them.
Yeah, totally. So God scatters, and then his counter is to take one group, again, one person, one line.
He actually goes to another party, and he's like, hey, can you be? Can you help me out at this?
Like, yeah, totally.
Get this other party back on track?
Yeah, and so this is the calling of Abraham.
Yeah.
The calling of Abraham.
You're going to have to leave your party.
That's right.
That you think's awesome.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Which is really just turning into a disaster.
Totally. That's right.
I mean, we can't even...
Yeah.
It doesn't even look like anything close to a party now.
Yeah, your lifespan's going to be really short if you stay at that party, at the anti-Eden party. So come back to Eden as a new human. Abraham and Sarah are a new Adam and Eve being invited into a new type of Eden. And the poem that opens up the Abraham story is exactly that.
It's like the original party kind of like stopped. Mm. It's guarded by cherubim now.
Yeah, right. Yeah, totally. Guess we're all kicked out.
Yeah. And God's like, we're going to start, but we're going to start again small.
Yeah. Yeah, start with one family. And what God says is, I'm going to give you blessing, 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 blessing.
This is the Abel figure.
Correct.
This is the person who...
Abraham?
Well, Abel.
Yeah.
It's the as a type, the
Correct.
One who gets the favor.
That's right. That's right.
Who then is Abraham.
Correct.
Who
yes.
is
yep.
Jacob.
Yep.
Is the one mm-hmm. who gets the favor, who
yes.
is the second born.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
Which is also
yep.
interesting.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And it's not because God... is being more generous to one than the other. It's that he's got a plan.
He's got a plan, and he's going to start with one.
He's going to start with one.
Because the promise that he makes to Abraham is, I'm going to bless you, bless you, bless you, bless you. And the last sentence of the poem is, and in you all the families of the earth will yeah. find blessing. But he is starting with one. And that's, again, we're back to the mystery of biblical election, which is God is on a mission to save, to bless, restore blessing to all if they want it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to start with one. But his selection of that one presents an ever-present choice for all those around.
Of envy, of
coveting. Envy, of anger. And that's what's being explored. In every generation of the book of Genesis, there are people, starting with Cain and Abel, actually starting with humans. There are those observing around, looking at the one God's chosen to be the vehicle of blessing for all. The people, the onlookers, are faced with a choice. And in every generation, there are those who choose jealousy, anger, and violence.
And God's response to
think of the Joseph
those,
story. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, and his response to Cain mm-hmm. is, just do the right thing.
Yeah, yeah. If you do good, you will be lifted up.
Yeah.
He says, yes, you'll
which,
be exalted.
Which is not what you want to hear when you like...
Oh, interesting.
When you're kind of, when you're feeling like you're being left out of the party.
Wow.
Like, yeah. I don't know. If I'm feeling unloved... It doesn't seem like what I want to hear, just be like, just do the right thing. But it's interesting that that's what God tells them. Like,
yes, Genesis 4:7. Isn't it true that if you do good, lifting up, this is in Hebrew, hyper-literal Hebrew. Isn't it so that if you do good, lifting up, exaltation?
If you do good, you'll be lifted up.
Yeah, that's right. The point is that you'll be exalted too. I'm favoring your brother right now, but there is exaltation for you as well.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me and do the right thing.
Just keep party on.
Just party on. All I'm asking you to do is enjoy the party. I'm really enjoying this parable. Everybody, thank you for listening to this episode of the Bible Project podcast. Today's show was produced by Dan Gummel. Theme music is by the band Tense. The Bible Project is a crowdfunded animation studio in Portland, Oregon. We make all of these videos and resources and podcasts. It's all available for free because of people like you and your generous support. So thank you guys so much for being a part of this with us.
Hello, my name is January Suyete Godoy. I'm from the Philippines, but I live in Okinawa, Japan. I use the Bible Project with our Asia Pacific Nazarene Youth International page on Facebook, and I share the videos there for our young people. What I like best about the Bible Project is the overviews of the books of the Bible. I read the scripture using the app, and so it's really nice to watch the video first. It really helps me understand all of the chapters easily with the background in mind. We believe the Bible is a unified story that leads to Jesus. We are a crowdfunded project by people like me. Find free videos, study notes, and more at thebibleproject.com.
Welkom terug by die program Krag van die Woord. Ons gaan nou lees en saam oordink ook Matteus 13, die bekende gelykenis van die saaier. Ons gaan dit probeer verstaan soos wat Jesus dit vir ons gee ook hier in Matteus 13. Kom ons lees dit eers saam en ons luister net heerlik na hierdie woorde van Jesus. Matteus 13 vanaf vers 1 En op daardie dag het Jesus uit die huis uitgegaan en by die see gaan sit. En 'n groot menigtes het hom vergader. Het by hom vergader, sodat hy in 'n skuit geklim en gaan sit het en die hele skare het op die strand gestaan. En hy het baie dinge deur gelykenisse tot hulle gespreek en gesê. 'N Saaier het uitgegaan om te saai. En terwyl hy saai, val 'n deel langs die pad en die voëls het gekom en dit opgeëet. 'N Ander deel het op die rotsagtige plekke geval, waar daar nie baie grond was nie. En dadelik het dit opgekom, omdat daar geen diepte van grond was nie. Maar toe die son opgaan, is dit verskroei. En omdat dit geen wortel gehad het nie, het dit verdroog. Ander deel het in die dorings geval, en die dorings het opgekom en dit verstik. Ander deel het op goeie grond geval, en vrug opgelever. Die 100, die ander 60, die ander 30-voudig. Wie ore het om te hoor, laat hom hoor. Die disippels het gekom en vir hom gesê, waarom spreek u tot hulle deur gelykenisse? Toe antwoord hy en sê vir hulle, omdat dit aan julle gegee is, om die verborgenhede van die koninkryk van die hemele te ken, maar aan hulle is dit nie gegee nie. Want hy wat het, aan hom sal gegee word en hy sal oorvloed hê. Maar hy wat nie het nie, van hom sal weggeneem word ook wat hy het. Daarom spreek ek tot hulle deur gelykenisse. Omdat hulle, terwyl hulle sien, nie sien nie. Terwyl hulle hoor, nie hoor of verstaan nie. En aan hulle word die profesie van Jesaja vervul, wat sê, met die gehoor sal julle hoor en glad nie verstaan nie. Julle sal kyk en glad nie sien nie. Want die hart van hierdie volk het stomp geword en die ore het hulle beswaarlik gehoor. En hulle oë het hulle toegesluit, sodat hulle nie miskien met die oë sou sien, met die ore hoor en met die hart verstaan en hulle bekeer en ek hulle genees nie. Maar julle oë is gelukkig omdat hulle sien en julle ore omdat hulle hoor. Want voorwaar ek sê vir julle, baie profete en regverdiges het begeer om te sien wat julle sien en het dit nie gesien nie. Om te hoor wat julle hoor en het dit nie gehoor nie. Luister julle dan na die gelykenis van die saaier. As iemand die woord van die koninkryk hoor en nie verstaan nie, kom die bose en roof wat in sy hart gesaai is. Dit is hy by wie langs die pad gesaai is. En by wie op rotsagtige plekke gesaai is, dit is hy wat die woord hoor en dit dadelik met blydskap aanneem. Maar hy het geen wortel in homself nie. Hy is net vir 'n tyd daar en as daar verdrukking en vervolging kom ter wille van die woord, struikel hy dadelik. En by wie in die dorings gesaai is, dit is hy wat die woord hoor. Maar die sorg van hierdie wêreld en die verleiding van die rykdom verstik die woord en hy word onvrugbaar. En by wie op die goeie grond gesaai is, dit is hy wat die woord hoor en verstaan en dan ook vrug dra en oplewer. Die 100, die ander 60, die ander 30-voudig. So wanneer ons nou hierdie lees, dan dis ek bekende woorde by ons almal. Maar dan wanneer Jesus verduidelik waarom hy in gelykenisse praat, dan raak dit moeilik om te verstaan. En ons sal juist daarop in fokus vandag. Hier by hierdie derde toespraak of preek van Jesus, waar hy mense toespreek. Die eerste was die bergrede, die tweede was toe Jesus sy disippels uitgestuur het, en nou die derde keer praat hy met sy volgelinge deur gelykenisse. So dit is belangrik om te verstaan hoekom die Here gelykenisse gebruik. Die groot oordeel van God was aan die kom. Wanneer dan die geregtigheid van God die regverdiges van die goddeloses sal skei. En mense het besef dat Jesus baie met hierdie komende oordeel in God se koninkryk te doen het. En soos hulle verwag het, die Messias, hulle redding van die onderdrukkers sal bring. Die onderdrukkers wat hulle vir so baie lank al onderdruk, die Romeine en allemaal wat deur die tyd heen hulle onderdruk het. Jesaja en Jeremia het hiervan gepraat. En hulle dink hulle het 'n goeie idee van hoe dit gaan wees wanneer die Messias kom. So Jesus, dat hy besondere dinge gedoen het, dat hy dinge doen wat hulle nie aan gewoond is nie, dat hy moed van God af wees, gaan hy dan een of ander tyd vir hulle opdrag gee om die wapens op te neem? Of wat gaan gebeur? Hoe gaan hy dit doen? In elk geval, dit waaroor hy praat is nie wat hulle verwag het nie. Hy praat nou van saad wat gesaai word, en hierdie is 'n snaakse boer, want hy saai 'n deel in die pad, 'n ander deel kom op die rotse, nog ander saad in die dorings, en net een deel val in goeie grond. Waarvan praat hy? Is daar dan 'n probleem vir God om sy koninkryk te vestig? Wat is aan die gang hier? Wat Jesus al meer keer gesê het natuurlik, en wat hy nou weer sê, is ja, hy is hier om God se beloftes te vervul. Hy is hier om die koninkryk van God te vestig. Maar dit gaan nie baie maklik wees om te verstaan nie. Dit gaan nie sommer net, hier is dit, dit pas nou, ons verstaan dit. Dit gaan baie inspanning neem om regtig te hoor waaroor gaan dit, hoe gaan God dit doen? En jy wil luisteraar, as ons dan nou self ook ons in die skoene van hierdie mense wat om Jesus geskaar is, daar waar hy op die water sit in die boot en dan praat met hulle en hulle om so helder duidelik hoor hier waar hulle op die strand op die kant staan. Maar hulle verstaan nie. En dan dink ek is een van die dinge wat baie duidelik uitkom uit hierdie gedeelte. Dat ons lees die woord en ons hoor dit. En ons dink ons verstaan dadelik wat die Here vir ons sê. Maar wat duidelik word hier en wat Jesus deel met die disippels oor die gelykenisse is dat mense kan nie maar net van 'n gemaklike gevolgtrekkings maak nie. Soos baie van ons baie keer dikwels doen, ons lees die woord moralisties. O, jy moet net dit doen, jy mag nie dit doen nie. Of quick fixes wat ek probeer kry, hoe om beter lewe te hê, om beter te lewe. Nee, die Christen boodskap, die goeie nuus, is nie maar net om ons lekker te laat voel nie. Dit gaan oor baie meer. Ja, dit gaan oor ewige vreugde. Dit gaan oor 'n ongelooflike diep blydskap. Wat die Here wil bring in ons harte. Maar hy bring dit op 'n wyse waarin ons moet inspan deur die Gees om te hoor wat hy sê. Oor dit wat hy doen in hierdie wêreld. Oor dit wat hy reeds in Jesus gedoen het vir ons. Die Here wil dat ons met mekaar hieroor sal praat, saam bid en soek en dit oordink. Hoe kan ons ander help om die goeie nuus te verstaan? Nie maar net formules nie, doen so en so. Nee. Jesus bring ons deur gelykenis, deur die gelykenis hierby. Om werklik te kan luister. Om hom te kan hoor. Om te kan verstaan wat sy woord vir ons sê. Kom ons luister dan na musiek en ons bedink dit terwyl ons luister en dan gaan ons verder met hierdie gesprek. Bly ingeskakel. So, hoe kan ons die gelykenisse verstaan? Hoe kan ons die woord van die Here verstaan? En hoor wat die Here vir ons sê? Hierdie gelykenis van die saaier is baie belangrik om dit werklik te kan verstaan. Jesus sê, eintlik vir die disippels, julle het 'n geskenk gekry om die geheime van die koninkryk van die hemel te verstaan. Maar ander mense het dit nie. Dit is aan julle gegee, dit is 'n gawe. Gawe van God. Gawe van die Gees. Dit is die eerste belangrike ding wat ons dadelik opval in hierdie woorde van Jesus. So om te verstaan, om die woord te verstaan, is 'n gawe van God. Hy gee dit vir jou. Jy kan baie jare se studie in die woord doen. En teologiese studies doen en dan kan jy nog nie verstaan nie. Om werklik te verstaan is 'n gawe van God. Rondom Jesus, in hierdie mense wat rondom hom is en in die wêreld wat hy geleef het, is daar mense wat die woord deur en deur bestudeer het. Maar nie verstaan het. Nie verstaan het waarvan Jesaja en Jeremia praat eintlik nie. Hulle eie denke gevorm het. En dit is die tweede ding wat baie belangrik word. Ons eie denke, hoe ons dink oor God, wie hy is. Hoe ons dink oor onsself, wie ons is, wat hierdie wêreld is. Dit is die grootste probleem. Om die woord van die Here te verstaan. Ons eie denke, die manier waarop ek dink, is die grootste ding. Dis waarom Paulus in Romeine 12 sê, laat julle denke verander word. Jesus sê eintlik vir hulle, die koninkryk van God is nie, sê maar net 'n kwessie van, hier kom die een wat hulle lei en nou gaan veg hulle en as jy die oorlog wen, dan weet jy dis van God. Ek het hierdie ding wat ek wil doen en ek gaan voluit en ek doen dit en as ek dit reg kry, dan weet ek dis van God. Dis nie hoe dit werk nie. Dis nie hoe sy koninkryk werk nie. Jesus is nie hier besig om die skare op te sweep sodat hulle kan terugvat van die Romeine en almal rondom hulle wat hulle sin is nie. Wat hulle dink hulle sin is nie. Waarom? Vra die disippels. Praat hy in gelykenisse. En dan gaan Jesus direk na Jesaja se woorde. Hier in Matteus 13 vers 14. Jesaja se woorde in Jesaja 6 vers 9 tot 13. Hulle sal hoor, maar glad nie verstaan nie. Hulle hart het stomp geword. En hulle ore hoor nie. Hulle oë is toegesluit. En uiteindelik is daar van Israel maar net 'n stomp wat oorbly. En eintlik sê Jesus dan ook vir hulle. Hy is hierdie stomp daar aan die kruis. Hy word aan hierdie stomp vasgespijker. Hy word Israel. En hy gaan sterwe. En dan opstaan. En dit is hoe die lewe, nuwe lote uit hierdie stomp gaan kom. Nuwe lewe. Dit is die koninkryk. So anders is wat hulle dink. Om die onderdrukkers omver te werp. Om die dinge te doen, want dit is hulle denke. Nee, laat jou denke verander word. en weet dit kom as 'n gawe van God om afhanklik van hom te wees en hom te vra om die woord vir jou oop te maak. Jesaja wys wat Jesus nou hier aanhaal, praat hy van hierdie stomp, die oordeel en dan die nuwe lewe. Die nuwe lood wat uit die stomp kom, wat God bring. Maar dit kom met oordeel en genade. Die oordeel kom met Jesus aan die kruis, wanneer hy sterwe vir die sonde. En dan wanneer hy opstaan, kom die genade, die nuwe lewe. Dit wat hulle wil hê, is dat God se oordeel moet kom. En want dan kom die oorwinning oor die vyande. Maar as God net sy oordeel sommer sou bring, sonder Jesus aan die kruis, hy self aan die kruis sterwe, as God dit sou doen, dan sou niemand op aarde oorgebly het nie. Want almal het voor God gesondig. Nee, hierdie oordeel oor ongeloof in God, oor die sonde, ongeregtigheid, dit kom. Dit gaan nou gebeur. En dan gaan daar uit hierdie stomp uit nuwe lewe kom. Genade. Jesus wys hier weer eens hoe hy vooruitgaan en daardie oordeel op homself geneem, sodat daar genade kom. Die disippels verstaan dit nie, heeltemal nie. Hulle verstaan ook nie hierdie gelykenis heeltemal nie. Maar hulle luister na Jesus. En hulle volg hom. En met die tyd sal hulle meer en meer begin verstaan. En dit is die woorde wat Jesus hier sê. Wie het, sal meer ontvang. God saai Israel weer hier deur Jesus, sodat hy die oordeel dra, wat saad gaan tog dood. Wanneer hy opstaan uit die dood, 'n nuwe lewe. So die vraag is nou, luisteraar, vir ons hier is die groot vraag. Dink jy ook soos ek self baie keer skuldig aan is, dat ek eintlik weet wat God nou moet doen in my lewe? Dis wat ek nodig het. Dis wat moet gebeur, of in die lewe van die kerk, of die lewe van die organisasies, of die lewe van die radio. Ja, ek dink ek weet. Ek vra en ek stoei met die Here daarom. Ek dink ek weet wat hy moet doen. Maar hoor ons regtig wat hy aan ons sê? Dat het anders gaan wees as wat ek dink. God werk anders as ons mense. En wanneer ons na hom begin luister, dan maak hy deur sy gees vir my die woord oop. Ek kan nie net op my eie verstaan nie. En dink, maar dit is wat God gaan doen nie. Om te verstaan, is die gawe van die gees. Dit word meer soos wat ek Jesus volg. En bly luister na sy woord. Wanneer hy dit oopmaak vir my, met 'n volheid. En soos die Bible Projects ook vandag vir ons dit ook oopgemaak het. God se generosity, sy vrygewigheid, die volheid, die abundance, die oorvloed wat hy gee. Eerder as my eie prentjie. Maar ek moet hom volg. En so wat ek hom volg, verstaan ek meer en meer deur sy woord. Dit is wat hierdie gelykenis vir ons sê. Kom ons luister na musiek en dan gesels ons verder hieroor. Welkom terug by die Abbo program Krag van die Woord. Ons het nou net gehoor hoe Jesus vir ons sê om nie op ons eie verstaan te vertrou nie. En daar is baie dinge wat inwerk op ons, die druk van die lewe, die oppervlakkigheid soms in ons soeke na wat ons wil hê. Baie redes, en so vorm ons ons eie denke, net soos die Israel van Jesus se tyd, wat gedink het, hulle weet hoe die Messias kom en wat hy gaan doen, hoe hy dit gaan doen. So, ons het duidelik gesien, ons kan nie op ons eie verstaan, ons eie denke, van wat God moet doen in ons lewe en ons wêreld vertrou nie. Daardie vinnige woorde wat ons dikwels hoor, God sê dit vir my. Ja, dit is baie keer opreg, maar het ek werklik geluister en luister na die woord? God sê vir my, dit is wat hy gaan doen. En dan haal ek ergens 'n vers aan uit die woord. Baie keer uit verband ook selfs. En dan sê ons, maar dit is wat God sê. Selfs mense wat lank studeer het in die woord, stry oor, maar dit is wat die Here sê. En dan wil hulle ander ook in daardie blik druk. Maar dit is mense gedagtes, net soos die teoloog van Jesus' tyd. En Jesus sê in hierdie vers aan ons, om te luister na hom. Te luister na wat die Gees in my getuig en sy woord aan my gee. Want die Gees sal aan my die gawe gee om te verstaan. Om te weet wat God sê vir my hier. Maar dan verduidelik Jesus dan hierdie gelykenis van die saaier. Die saad wat so oral val, maar uiteindelik ook op goeie grond. Ja, Jesus het hierdie baie verskillende reaksies op sy boodskap van die koninkryk van God. Hy het dit gesien. En dan illustreer hy vir hulle dit. Die saad wat op verskillende plekke val. Daar is net een plek waar die saad val, waar het vrug dra. Ons sal ook later sien dat die saaier moet wag op die oes. In hierdie gelykenis wys hy vir ons net daar waar ons vashak en nie die woord hoor nie. Ons kan so besig wees met ons lewe, ons werk, ons planne, dat ons nie eens hoor en glad nie verstaan wat die Here deur sy woord aan ons sê nie. Dit is wanneer die saad op die pad val. Ek is so besig, so aan die gang, dat ek vat nie in dit wat hy sê nie. Ek doen dit uit plig. Of ek doen, omdat ek dit moet doen, of ek het baie ander motiewe, om ander te beïndruk, wat dit ook al is. Of ons hoor die woord en dink, wow, dit klink goed. Maar ons kom nie naby daaraan om ons in te span, om regtig te verstaan wat die Here vir ons sê, deur gebed en worsteling met die Here, tot hy vir ons dit oopmaak. En wanneer die druk van die lewe kom, dan word dit te veel vir my en ek draai weg. Dit is wanneer die saad op die rotse val. Of ons is so besig met worry, bekommernis, stoei om geld te maak, om iets op te bou, dat ek nie tyd het om te luister en God se woord te hoor. Dis die saad wat in die dorings val. Dit verstik eintlik dat ek nie die woord hoor nie. Maar dan die laaste ene, die saad wat op goeie grond val. Dis hulle wat die woord hoor en die werk van die Gees in hulle lewe ervaar. En nie sommer net maklike gevolgtrekkings maak. Dit is hoe ek dink. Maar ek sê, dit is hoe die Here sê nie. Maar ek bly luister. Ek span my in deur die Gees, sodat hy dit vir my oopmaak. En wanneer ek die woord lees, dan getuig die Gees in my. Dit is hoe Jakobus dit ook beskryf. Nie vinnige Bybel lees en toemaak. Nee, daar is miskien dorings wat uitgetrek moet word. Daar is klippe, rotse, wat verskuif moet word in my lewe. Maar algaande begin ek luister en ek verstaan. Al maak ek ook foute, net soos die disippels nog baie foute sou doen. Ja, Petrus sou self die Here verloën. En almal sou weggehardloop het. Alles wat die Here hier beskryf. Maar algaande het hulle beter begin verstaan. En die Gees het dit oopgemaak vir hulle. So, lieve luisteraar, laat ons die Here volg. En laat ons die pad saam met hom loop. Laat ons die reg om te verstaan vir hom gee, dat hy dit vir ons as 'n gawe deur die Gees kan gee. Nie my eie verstaan nie. Maar laat ons dit neerlê. Hy wat sy lewe verloor sal het vind, sê Jesus. En soos wat ek hom volg, en soos wat ek sien hoe ek verkeerd verstaan en afval, groei ek, want ek volg hom, ek luister na hom, ek bly luister na die woord, en algaande begin het beter en helderder word vir my. En ek begin vrugte dra. 160, 30-voudig. Ek begin dra. Dis die punt. Die liefde van God begin deur my vloei na al my verhoudings waarin ek staan. En ek kry die vreugde van die oes, net soos die saaier die vreugde kry. Kom ons gaan hier vanmôre voor ons tot ziens sê, en ons sê net weer vir mekaar. Die Heer Jesus sê vir ons hier, om die woord te verstaan, is 'n gawe wat die Gees vir ons gee. God gee dit self. Maar ek moet my inspan, en nie sommer my eie denke, my eie gedagtes indruk in die woord nie. Of die woord indruk in my gedagtes nie. Maar ek moet bly luister tot hy dit oopmaak vir my. Want dit is sy belofte, hy gee dit vir my. Sodat ek die vreugde in hom voltyd, altyd, tot in ewigheid kan verstaan. Here, ons kom nou ook aan die einde van hierdie program. Kom ons na u toe. Sê Here, ons het baie dinge gehoor ook vandag. Ons hoor baie dinge ook en ons lees dit in die woord. Ons wil hoor wat u sê vir ons deur die woord. Die getuienis van die Gees in ons ervaar. Dat dit is wat u sê. En nie maar net oppervlakkige toepassings maak omdat dit my pas nie. Here, vergewe ons waar ons dit doen. En laat ons dan leer om werklik te kom, om vrug te dra. Dankie dat u ons op hierdie pad neem. Dat u vir ons gesterf het, ja, 'n stomp geword het, dood aan die kruis. Maar dat u opgestaan het. Nuwe loot, en nou is ons in u, en kan ons ook groei. Dit is ons begeerte, Here, om te groei, en te groei deur u Gees, sodat ons meer en meer verstaan, en u weg, u pad met ons, begryp. Dankie, Here, dankie vir wat u doen, in elkeen se lewe wat hierdie woorde hoor, ons bid dit in Jesus naam, ons Here. Amen. Dit was sonder lekker om vandag oor hierdie bekende gelykenis saam te gesels. Mag die Here ons seën met verstaan en dat ons kan verwag dat hy dit vir ons sal oopmaak. Elke woord is sy woord. Tot ziens, tot volgende keer.
Hierdie inset was aan jou gebring met die komplimente van Radio Kaapse Kansel 729 AM. Besoek ons gerus by www.capepulpit.co.za.